Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we are brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, Function Smart Physical Therapy, and Babbittville Radio. You can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or at Babbittville.com. Our next guest, he has won 6 Ironman titles. He won the 2005 Ironman World Championship. He's done 35 Ironman races in his amazing career, Mr. Faris Al-Sultan. Faris, how the heck are you?
Well, difficult at the moment. Confused is probably the right word for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you think about it. You started this sport, what, 18? I think your first Ironman was like 18 years ago. It's a long time.
Yeah, 1997. Exactly.
Yeah. So 18 years as a professional athlete. And you raced Ironman Texas yesterday, and 35 Ironman races. That's a lot of Ironman races. We were talking about it yesterday. Dave Scott might have done 10 or 11 in his career. Mark Allen, probably, you know, about the same. 35 Ironman races. Did you just get to a point yesterday at Ironman Texas where you just knew that it's time to move on?
Yeah, you know, I had... In my career, you know, I had the classical build-up, you know, you learn how the game works, and then I've had these 3 magic years in 04, 05, and 06. And then I had a kind of a low, and I worked myself out of that low, and it wasn't magic anymore, but I still had good results. I won races.
Yes.
And but yesterday I reached a point where I'm again struggling with, it's not like in sort of an injury. And the last 2 years, I was just dealing more with the injuries than actually training. And, I reached the point where I'm no longer ready to do that for the kind of results that I'm probably able to get.
It's harder to go through all the therapy and all the dealing with all the little niggles that you get from racing when you feel like, okay, if I go there 100%, I might get 4th or 5th place.
Exactly. You know, if you're still capable of being great, then it's, in my opinion, it's probably worth going through everything.
Sure.
But if you're not, and especially, I mean, the most important thing is your brain. If you're mentally no longer there to, you know, to really be there 100%, Then it's hard, and yesterday I realized that, okay, I've had so many bad races, and I can't stand having one more bad race.
And so basically you finished the bike ride and didn't start the marathon.
Yeah.
Because you knew during the bike ride that, you know what, I just don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah, I had the pain in my hamstring and my glutes right from the start of the bike ride, and I was pushing for an hour, pushing for 2 hours, pushing for another 45 minutes, and then I said, you know what, I don't want to do it anymore, and I don't want to have that pain, and the thought of running a marathon was frightening, and you know, that's the point where I said, okay, now it's the time to leave that.
And is it one of those things, I mean, you think about how your life has changed. You've got, what, a one-year-old, you're a dad now, you've been doing this, like we said, for as a top pro for 18 years, which, you know, is an endurance athlete, usually... I remember talking to Olympic gold medalist Frank Shorter. He says, usually an elite athlete has a 10-year window of being great, right? And in that 10-year window, usually you have, like you mentioned, 3 or 4 years where you just feel like every time you go to the line, you can win.
Yeah.
18 years. I mean, you have to look back on that and go, I've had a really good run.
Well, I mean, in the beginning, I wasn't a full professional, but... let's say I've had from, in 2000, I won my first long distance race. I was a German long distance champion.
Yep.
And so it was already, it's 15 years of racing on a good level, and I'm happy. I'm happy with what I've accomplished, and of course you always aim for more, but looking back at it, I'm happy, and yeah, it's the kid is another thing, and the niggles, and the way, just about everything. You know, if all those little things 10 years ago might have been any problem at all.
Right.
But now, you know, every little thing becomes an obstacle.
Right.
And you're only willing to jump over so many hurdles, and then you're not anymore.
Well, you mentioned it too. When you're working with your therapist in the days, back in the day, you'd have a tight area and they would work it out. And you'd be better. Now, when you have a little knot, it's not like the knots are going away.
It's the structure of my muscle has changed and is simply damaged. And comparing to other professional athletes, I mean, we walk away from this sport and we are fairly healthy. And you know, I won't complain, and I have no regrets compared to a football player,
right,
or a soccer player,
yes,
or a tennis
rugby
player.
Yeah, yeah.
We are super healthy, but still there is a price that you pay, and you cannot reverse that.
What will you miss? What do you think you'll miss about being a professional athlete? Will it be, you know, just the races themselves, the travel, and what do you want to do next?
Well, honestly, I don't really know what I want to do next. There are some plans, but the easiest thing, of course, is to go into coaching,
right?
Because this is what you really know about.
Sure.
But on the other hand, I'd like to look for a new challenge, maybe in a completely different field.
Yes.
And to prove to myself that I can succeed somewhere else than triathlon. But there is no particular plan at the moment. And right now I'm going to go back and talk to the race organizers. I still have contracts with, talk
right
to my sponsors, and, you know, finish that season, trying to make everybody happy that was working with me in the last couple of years, and sort that thing out, and then I'll go then take the next step.
You know, you're part of really the first generation of Ironman athletes that is doing, you know, 35 Ironman races, 30, 35. I know Meredith Kessler's done over 50 now. Back in the day, there was one major Ironman event, and that was in Hawaii, and you didn't have to really qualify to get there. And once you had won in 2005, it was sort of your choice if you wanted to do another Ironman during the year. Has it been tough with the qualification process, where you sort of have to do an Ironman to validate, and getting, now you have to get points because being a world champion. Being world champion, you just need to validate, correct? You don't have to go and get points.
No, I have to get the points.
Oh, you still have to get the points. So really, the winning, the fact that you're a former champion doesn't really matter.
Well, it matters for 5 years.
Ah.
And then technically I'm able to go,
yeah,
to Kona, but only as an age group athlete.
Right.
And of course, this is a different story. You know, on the one hand, I think that it was the right thing to do to cut down the pro slots. I mean, the 50 best men and the 35 best women, I think this is fair. And, you know, where do you have a world championship where you have more than 50 good athletes?
Right.
That's not happening. And so I think this is okay. And I also think that it's okay to have an athlete race, another Ironman, but, you know, not two of them in a year. If Kona is the third Ironman in your season, I think that simply the quality,
yes,
of your racing is suffering. And I mean, if you have had a nice result in Kona, let's say you were top 10,
yes,
then you only have to do one more Ironman race and do well there, and then you're basically qualified. So I think this is okay. On the other hand, it's tough for other athletes to get in, of course, that are not top 10, top
right.
15. And, I don't have a super smart solution for it, because you cannot really, you know, the points, for example, if you would allow us to get a lot of points through 70.3s, that wouldn't really, you know, translate into Ironman results, because you have so many great athletes on shorter distances that are not really that great on Ironman distance. So I don't have a perfect solution for it. I think that the system as it is now is quite okay. Of
mm-hmm.
course, it takes a toll on you.
That's what I was saying. Is I remember covering marathons, and I would see a great marathoner like a Rob DiCostella at the starting line. You can almost see it in their eyes that they knew what was in front of them and that they really didn't want to be there. And that's sort of the way I look at you now. You're sort of, you know, when you're at the starting line of an Ironman, there's a point where you're really not going to want to be there. When you're towards the end of the bike ride thinking, I'm going to have to get off the bike and run 26.2 miles, I'm just not ready for that.
Yeah, and, you know, if you were there and, you know, I know I can do, let's say I'm healthy, then I know I can do an 8:30 or 8:45 almost any weekend, you know.
Right, yeah.
That's not the point, but that won't be satisfying, because with an 8:45 you're 10th place or something.
Right.
And this might be a great result for a younger athlete, but for a guy that has won Kona, it's not a great result. And I'm not willing to go to any pain for that.
Right.
You know? And so, and if I know before that the result won't be there, and it's not so much about the result, it's more about like the feeling that you have, you know, you see the times and you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I was much faster than that, and you just don't feel good when you're doing it.
Exactly.
And that's really bad about it.
Now, how has your training changed through the years, and you've had to adapt, I'm sure, to getting a little older? I mean, you're still only 37. That's Mark Allen won his last Ironman when he was 37, and Macca won when he was 37 or 38, and same with, you know, Craig Alexander.
The big difference between Alexander, for example, and me is that
a lot more Ironman.
Yeah, Groey has entered Ironman distance at a far later point in his career, and he hasn't done a lot of Ironman racing.
Right.
And so, I mean, he has, of course, taken a lot of beating throughout the training, but he simply hasn't had that many Ironman races. And but for me, it was always, as I started out as an age group athlete, for me it was always about Ironman, and all the success that I've had on shorter distances, of course the limited success
like Olympic and sprint and things like that,
I mean, I was never on a world class level at shorter distances, but I was solid, and all the success that I had was kind of the waste product out of the Ironman training. And so it was always about Ironman, so that's why I have done all these races, and that's why I enjoyed it, and that's why I'm done. And the training has changed, of course. As I said, now I don't have to train that much to be good, but I can train as much as I could, and I have a great day or a great training camp, and then I need a week off.
Exactly. Well, I remember talking to some, you know, like a Rod Dixon and some of the great New Zealand runners, and they would say, you know, I could do the same training day that I did 10 years ago, but now I can't follow it up with another one. I need to take 2 days off in between. You know, it's like they could still do the same training mentally and physically, but it's a recovery part that makes it really hard to sustain.
Yeah, and you know, mostly it's for example, your cardiovascular system is right up there, and you know, you have developed that engine over 20 years. That's there, but all the little other things, you know, prevent you from having great training sessions. I used to have three great training sessions per discipline per week, and now it's maybe one.
Right.
At best.
Yeah. So when you look back and getting into the sport, you come from a swimming background. Was it Thomas Hellriegel, your fellow German, who was sort of your motivation for getting into triathlon?
Yeah, he was.
And what was it about him? Just the way he attacked the bike ride?
Yeah. This take no prisoners approach on the bike, and he was the role model of going through pain. And that was something that I loved about him. And
yes.
He was the guy, you know. And so I bought the same bike that he had. I bought the clothes that he had.
Yeah.
And he was the man.
So at the same time, you watched Thomas as he probably stayed on a little too long, doing Ironman, you know, towards the end of his career. And was that hard to watch? Because here was a guy who was the dominant guy, and then you could sort of see age catching up with him.
Yeah, it was sad to see, and I really didn't like it. And, you know, he had injuries, and he simply, you could tell that it wasn't there anymore. His bike ride was still good, because that's what he loved training the most. And this is where you usually feel the injuries the least. And but, you know, the rest was just, especially the running, wasn't there anymore. and I don't want to give any more excuses why I couldn't execute at a race. And, you know, you have to realize at a point, okay, it's over, and, you know, get on with life and look for something else.
So when you look at your era with you and Norman Stadler, and before that with Thomas Hellriegel and Jürgen Zach and Wolfgang Dietrich, I mean, the Germans have had a huge impact on the sport, and especially on the bike side of it. What is it about that heritage of great cyclists? So why are the Germans so dominant on the bike?
Well, honestly, I don't really know, and I mean, to follow up with the line that you brought up, I mean, the ruling Kona champion Sebastian Kienle is an exceptional cyclist.
Yes,
and,
exactly, same thing.
So there is already the next guy there, and we might find couple of other ones.
Yep.
Niels Frommholt is pretty good, and is the next generation, and. So I don't really know. I got asked that question frequently, and I think to some degree it's because of the work ethic that the Germans have, and that seems to translate into our training as well, and seems to pay off on the bike. And I think that that's the best explanation that I can give. And probably because the role models are there, so you try to follow them.
Right. So what do you remember about, what I remember about your win in 2005 is I remember interviewing you and you're talking about that it was so exciting to be chasing the helicopter. You know, you were riding along the Queen Highway and chasing the helicopter. I'm like, well, Ferris, I don't think you're chasing the helicopter. I think it's following you. but it just seemed you just had such a perfect day. I mean, going into that day, did you feel like I am really ready to win this race?
No, I wasn't. I never thought that I'm the Kona winner type guy.
Yeah.
I went into it and I knew that I want to make it as hard as possible as I can for anybody else to win.
Yes.
And I simply enjoyed being in front. And when I came into T2 and I heard that Peter Reed is only 2:45 back,
yes,
and all the other guys, Cam Brown was close, and so I thought, yeah, well, they are going to catch me, but I'll make them suffer for it. And then all of a sudden the gap widened again. And then I was more or less a bit surprised, but I thought, okay, then if I have a chance, then I'll take it. And
you did.
It worked out.
How did that change your life, winning that race? Because that's Ironman is obviously winning in Germany, which you'd won in Frankfurt, and there's the winning in Germany is really important for German athletes, but winning Kona is still very, very special. And did that change a lot of things sponsorship-wise and in terms of perception of Ferris al-Sultan in Germany?
Of course. I mean, that has changed my life, for sure. And, for example, the year before when Norman won and I was third,
yes.
I've given two interviews after the race.
Yes.
After my victory in 2005, I gave two interviews a week, 50 weeks straight.
That is awesome.
That was just, it was amazing. And I was the mark guy, you know.
Yes.
Every race, everywhere I went,
yes.
You know, I was the one that was supposed to win the race. And it was, to some degree, a burden, of course. To some degree, it was great. I mean, I had all the attention. And, of course, sponsorship-wise, it didn't change considering the sponsors that I've had. It
yeah.
just changed the figures that were on the invoice.
Yeah, right, because you got more bonuses and things like that.
More bonuses and next year more base salary.
Yes.
And of course, that was a new level. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of times when people win, like Pete Jacobs won in 2012, and sometimes there's a hangover. It's hard to come back and because, like you said, you're doing more interviews. There's more pressure on you to every race you go to. You can't just sort of go and train through it because people are expecting you to win. But you came back in 2006. I think you took third that year. So, you know, you were able to perform at the year after winning as well. How important was that for you? Because when I look at your career, what, 9 top 10s in Kona, including your win, 5 top 5s, being consistent, when you look back at your career, there's very few people who have that type of record.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that my third place in 2006 was probably more important and was a better performance than the victory in the previous year. Not because that the actual performance by the data was much better,
yeah.
But because I simply had to overcome more to reach it. And I knew when I was in Kona in 2006, I was already exhausted from the season.
Yes.
And so that was very good. And, I mean, on the other hand, Pete Jacobs probably is the role model for somebody, you know, who completely lost it after his victory. And which is a pity because, I mean, he has had two really, really good years. The year he won and the year before.
Yes.
And so he was doing very well. And since then, I mean, at Ironman distance, he was just lost, or he is lost. And I don't know what happened, what's his problem, but it can happen.
It's hard because as the Ironman world champion, you know firsthand, everybody wants you at their race. Everybody wants you to win their race. And it's, you know, you're getting pulled in a number of different directions. Sometimes it's hard to just go and train.
Yeah. But you have to make the time. On the other hand, what I regret a bit, I don't have many regrets in
yes.
my career, but what I regret a bit is that the opportunities that I've had after my victory, because it was quite a media hype
yes.
after it. I mean, I received a Bambi prize.
Yes.
I'm the only triathlete in Germany who has received it, which is kind of a media prize.
Yep.
And so I had the opportunity to meet a lot of interesting people and do some networking and stuff. And I didn't really do that. And I didn't take the time to do more on that side. Simply because I said I got to go back to training,
right?
And I thought I already had so many obligations in that year that I knew that if I take more off, then my results wouldn't be there. But on the other hand, in the wider picture, it would have been better, you know, to work more into that. But it is how it is, and I can't change it.
Well, and so you had a lot of opportunities when you were winning these awards for, you know, for top athlete, because you came over to our endurance awards back in early 2006.
Yep.
And I remember picking you up at the airport, and I'm like waiting for your bags, and the only thing you had was a cardboard bike box with your bike in it and all your clothes.
Yeah.
You've always been a guy who's, as we would say, marches to the beat of a different drummer. You were out there racing in your Speedo, you know, all your clothes in a bike box. Didn't even have one of those big plastic bike cases. You had a cardboard box. Did you like sort of being the minimalist type of guy? And, you know, in being a little different?
Well, it was not about being different. I mean, I not deliberately choose that. It just...
That's who you were.
That was how it was. And of course I made mistakes. And the minimalistic approach is to be changed at a certain point. And, of course, it has changed a bit. Nowadays, if I travel, I still have the cardboard box, but I usually have another bag with me.
So you still use a cardboard box?
Yeah, I still do.
Nice!
I still do.
That is great. That is great. Yeah, we just posted a fun photo from the awards that year with you and the cyclist Davis Finney and the runner Rod Dixon. And it was really, that was a cool evening of athletes from different sports. When you look at other races besides your huge win at 2005 in Ironman, what other, your first Ironman win, I think you won Ironman Arizona back in, was that in 2005 as well?
Yeah.
So that 2005 was a pretty amazing year.
Yeah. Yeah.
With that, how important was that first Ironman win, getting that in Arizona?
Of course, that was very important. I mean, I've had good results before. I was second in 2001. At Ironman Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and in 2004 I was second in Roth, and
yes.
So I was seventh in Kona in 2003. So I had good results, but I still didn't have that win, partly because I simply choose tough races,
right?
With good
competition,
opponents.
Yes.
So, of course, that was very important, and you know, it's always important for your ego and also for your resume that you have finally won an Ironman race.
As a pro, you know, and moving forward, what do you think you'll miss most? Will you miss the training, or will you miss lining up again? We were talking a little bit this morning or yesterday that, boy, you know, being somebody, moving from being an athlete to working with a team, so you're still traveling with a team, training with the team if you feel like it, but then going to the race and not having to race might be a great way to keep the same lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for every pro athlete that stops, the lifestyle is probably the thing that he misses most. Honestly, what I don't miss is flying around that much.
Yes, especially as a dad.
Exactly. So that's something that I don't miss. But the lifestyle, of course, you know, you go to nice places where the weather is nice and where you have no care in the world besides training, because you're staying in a hotel. There is a buffet, you know, you don't clean the table and nothing, you know, you just train, eat, sleep. And the simplicity of that lifestyle, of course, is appealing, and that will be hard. And I won't miss the training because obviously I'm going to train a lot still, you know, because you can't, I mean, this is what I enjoy and
right.
Can't take that away. I have to, or I'm going to look for something different, and then my lifestyle will change, and that would be the hardest. Yeah.
Now, did you have one athlete like a Norman Stadler or somebody who you raced a lot, and you just, you know, you guys always, there was a little bit of a rivalry with them, or was, you know, you raced a lot of the same guys, but it wasn't, there really wasn't a rivalry. Did you feel, boy, I really, if there's one person I want to beat, I want to be the first German at this race, I want to knock off Norman?
Honestly, the rivalry with Norman was always a bit more hyped through the media. I mean, I was never a great Norman Stadler fan, but he was, I never had big issues with him.
Yeah.
The only guy I ever had issues with is Macca.
Yes. And what were those issues? What issues did you have with him?
Well, honestly, I don't want to bring up the old stories.
Okay.
And, you know, he's retired. I'm retired now. So
you're both parents.
yeah. I look like a bad loser, and I don't want to to go deep into that. But just to say something, he doesn't have that many friends that liked his racing style amongst other pros.
Right.
So
yeah.
So, you know, if you have a problem with one person, then that's one thing. But if you have a problem with a lot of persons, then it might be you are the problem, you know? So, yeah.
Or there's a different philosophy, right? Some people go, listen, I don't want to make friends. I'm here to win races, and I don't care what I do to win races.
Yeah, I mean...
Which is different. It's just a different philosophy.
Yeah.
So when I look at when I look back at, you know, everything that you've accomplished, would you consider your second best race besides Kona? Is that the third place the following year, you think?
Well, that was, at least to me, it was a great race and
yeah,
a great accomplishment. Also because my run was pretty good. I mean, that was the best run. Performance
best
in Kona that I've had. Other than that, a great race that I've never thought I'd pull off and was able to do was the victory in Frankfurt in 2011,
yes,
which I think was my last great victory. I've had victories after that, but they weren't that great. I mean, they were still solid performances, but not really great. But that one was great, and I think that was really the last time where I could, you know, really, really go into the pain zone.
Yes.
And I always say that I left a piece of my soul down there at the main river, and because this was simply, I mean, I had to give it all, and it was really worth it. I mean, there is probably, Frankfurt is probably the best finish line that you find out there at the Ironman circuit.
Yes.
And waving from that balcony on at the Roma from the Mayor's Hall, I mean, this is, you feel like a king.
And that was the European Championships. That
yeah,
wasn't just, so that's another one of those races where you had a phenomenal field. It's not like winning in Austria or Regensburg or Malaysia,
yeah,
right?
When you
go win the European Championships at Frankfurt, in your home country, that's a big win.
Yeah, that was a big win, and as I said, the feeling waving from the balcony, that is you can't top that. I mean, that was just great.
So the other thing is, when you talk about your first Ironman in basically what, 97 or way back, look at how much the sport has grown during the time that you've been in the sport. I mean, at that time we didn't have Coeur d'Alene or Arizona or Lake Placid. We didn't have any races in the U.S. besides Kona. The sport has grown so much. Are you surprised at the growth of the sport of triathlon?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. The first time I lined up for an Ironman in Lanzarote, there
yes,
were about 700 participants.
Yeah.
Now Lanzarote is almost sold out, and all those races popped up, and it's great, and especially in developing countries, but you know, those Eastern European
yes,
countries or countries,
Asian
like
countries, sure,
Asia or Mexico,
South America, yes.
And in the last 5 years, those countries have developed immensely on the triathlon side, and they went, Poland and Mexico went from 300 triathletes and 5 races is to 5,000 triathletes and 100 races.
Yes.
And it's great to see the sport grow, and I'm pretty sure that it stays growing, and this is great because I think our sport is great.
So when someone like Sebastian Kienle wins in Hawaii and continues to validate the greatness of German triathletes, what type of relationship with Sebastian do you have? Because he seems like someone who really respects the athletes that came before him.
Well, I have a good relationship with Sebastian, and he's doing his own thing.
Right.
But I just briefly, just recently, I saw him in Cannes at the race.
Yeah.
And he's a great guy. I mean, he's very successful, working hard, doing the right thing, it's cool that we have another Ironman winner.
Yes.
And to some degree, I guess he knows what happened in the past, and I mean, we were more or less weren't really. When one of my good performances, when I still was a bit magic,
yes,
he was in Kraichgau, which is now a 70.3. It used to be had several distances, and I remember him saying he won the short distance there, and I won the kind of the middle distance there, and he was impressed that I could ride 2 kilometers an hour on average faster than he could on the shorter distance.
That's impressive.
So it's great. It's simply great to see more young talent coming up. And but I think he's more focused on the present and the future than he's on the past.
Exactly. But he's got role models like yourself and Thomas and Jürgen and other guys who've come before him and sort of paved the way. Ferris, the thing that, again, strikes me the most is just your consistency. The 35 Ironman races, at the age of 37, now is the time. And usually athletes, there is the light bulb goes on, you're in the middle of a race and you go, I don't want to be here anymore. And it's usually not something that happens. It happens over time, but usually there's one moment when you know. And so yesterday it came for you during a bike ride. And it's best of luck with everything that you do next. You've been such a great representative for the sport of triathlon, and it doesn't grow the way it has without personalities like yourself in our sport.
Thank you very much.
Ferris, thanks so much for taking time. Congratulations on everything you've done in your career. And do you think, are you one of those guys who will still be, racing in some way, shape, or form? I'm someone like a Mark Allen, when he walked away, he's never done a triathlon since. And, at age 37, after he won his last one, do you still see yourself out there potentially doing some relays and doing some racing?
Well, I still want to stay fit, of course,
right.
And want to do swimming, biking, and running. And I have some obligations for this year that I'm going to fulfill at some short course races. But after that, I'd rather do some other races that I haven't had a chance to do in my professional career, and like New York Marathon,
Yes.
And not for running 2:45 or 2:30 or
for
whatever,
fun.
But just for being there and experiencing it.
Yes.
And some other races, cycling. There's a famous cycling race, Trondheim Oslo. In Norway, and some more like crazy stuff, and but not where I don't try to win and show everybody that I'm best, but just to participate and to enjoy the thing in itself.
Love it. Ferris El-Sultan has been our guest, a 2005 Ironman World Champion. We're talking 9 top 10s in Kona, 5 top 5s, legendary career. Ironman Texas might have been the last Ironman in his career. Ferris, thanks again for taking so much time.
thank you very much for having me. It was a great pleasure.
All right, Faris El-Sultan again has been our guest. We are brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, Function Smart Physical Therapy, and check us out on Babbittville Radio on iTunes and on Babbittville.com. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.